I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. This has been a heavy season for political books, what with the major biographies on MacDonald, King, John Turner, Thomas Darcy, McGee, among four major releases this fall. There were also popular political books like Peter Newman's on the Liberal Party, as well as memoirs. The one from Alan Fotheringham was a notable read. The one that I found a great read, not just because it had analysis of politics and media over the last couple of decades, but also because it has gossip, is Craig Oliver's book. In Oliver's twist, The Life and Times of an Unapologetic Newshound, you get funny, candid, and fascinating stories, but you also get the deeply personal story of the famed television journalist. You hear you read the heart-rending story of Mr. Oliver's childhood in Prince Rupert, B.C., about his bootlegger father and his alcoholic mother. You read about being abandoned as a child, his beginnings in broadcasting, right up to today where he's one of the most recognized, respected, and beloved journalists in Canada. He lived this remarkable life, having to deal with failing eyesight. In those passages about finding out about losing his eyesight, you glean courage, but also lessons in not feeling self-pity. It's a great book, and published by Viking. Craig Oliver is the chief parliamentary correspondent for CTV News and the co-host of Question Period. He's won a multitude of awards. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Ottawa this day, Craig Oliver. Good morning, Mr. Oliver.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you for that introduction. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks for joining us. This was a great book to read. Did you have fun writing it?
It was hard work writing it. I got to tell you, Joe, television is a lot easier.
Really?
It was very hard work, and especially in the last few years when my vision no longer allows me to read. I have a software system that reads the screen to me, but sometimes when you're changing things around, it's hard to find the line you were on. You misspell words. So the last couple of years of working on it, especially the last 7 or 8 months up until last April, were really very intensive and hard work, and it wasn't really fun. There was a lot of stories I wanted to get down. I'm a storyteller, and I'm glad I did, and I've enjoyed doing that.
Now, you're legally blind. You see shadows. Is that right?
Well, I describe my vision as, if you like French Impressionism, and you understand what that is, I describe my vision as Monet vision, after the great French Impressionist, with a little bit of fog added to it. I don't see any detail, but I see shapes and colors, and I see doors and windows, and I'm fine when I'm in familiar environments, although even there I have to be careful, but in unfamiliar environments or at night, I can get pretty confused sometimes. But I get by quite well, and when I do a lot of speaking for the CNIB, and I tell people, you know, you have to realize that with all of the modern digital help that's around, blindness, if it's not total blindness, it doesn't have to be more than a nuisance.
Now, is your vision progressively getting worse?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's a progressive disease. I have glaucoma. Mm-hmm. It's a progressive disease which is incurable, but it can be arrested with good physicians, good help over a period of years. You can slow it down. You can't stop it. You can't cure it, but you can slow it down. And most people who get glaucoma don't get it until they're quite old. So, you know, the Grim Reaper gets them before blindness does. In my case, I got glaucoma in my mid-30s, and that's not good because that means it's got an awful lot of time to work on you.
Yeah. Now, when we see you on TV, are you reading a teleprompter?
No, I can't read a teleprompter. In fact, I can't see the camera. So the crews have designed a very powerful, almost laser-like light that goes on top of the camera, so I know where to look.
Now, when you found out that you were going blind, your friend Peter Stollery gave you advice, and it's good advice to heed for anyone with whatever sort of condition they're dealing with.
Yeah.
What did he tell you?
He said, you can't do anything about it, so deal with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, well, that's right. That's exactly right, and that's exactly what I did. If you can't do anything about something, just deal with whatever you can do to minimize it or get along and work with it.
Yeah.
Embrace it.
Yeah. Now, in the book, you begin about your childhood in Prince Rupert. You talk about your mom and your dad. You know, I kept thinking about them long after I finished reading the book. It's an awfully melancholy life that they led.
They had very sad lives. These were hard times. British Columbia was doing okay. It wasn't booming, though. This was during the war when I was growing up in Rupert. My father had gone up there because he had been arrested and charged in Vancouver with faking liquor ration cards, so he decided he better skip town after paying a fine and went to Rupert and started bootlegging, which was a much better way to make a living up there. And so it was wartime. Life was fast and easy. And, you know, there was a lot of dysfunctionality in people's families. And one day when I was about 6 or 7 years old, my mother just kind of disappeared. My father couldn't look after me. So he was okay financially, but he just wasn't a guy that could deal with fatherhood or child rearing. And he took me around looking as appealing as possible to various families who needed extra money to take me in, and then he would send them a check, and I would live with these families.
The I described it as a melancholy life, and after reading it, I sort of got the feeling that there was stuff that you wanted to say to your dad, stuff that you wanted to ask your mom if you could. Do you think about things like that?
Well, not. I would like to. I would have liked to have known more about my father. I would like to have known what he believed in. I would like to have known more about his parents. I never did. We never. I barely ever saw him. He would pop in and out of my life. It was all like a badly edited home movie. But there was never a sustained period together in which we could talk about those things. So I really never knew him. Later on, my mother came back into my life, and we had a more satisfactory time together. But she was an alcoholic. She had she was bipolar, but I didn't know what bipolar was at the time. I wish I had known. And as she got older, she became more and more depressed, and you know, and her life became more and more difficult.
There was one story you tell in the book. One of these families that you ended up living with was Mabel, she was mean to you. Whatever happened to her adopted son Jimmy? Did he amount to anything?
Well, that's an interesting thing you say. When I was living in Washington for 9 years, I did an American network, a public affairs network, PBS, Public Broadcasting System, network show called International Edition. I was on it every week, and I hosted it in the summers. And I got a call from Seattle one day, and it was Jimmy who had seen me on television and tracked me down through them. He was a caretaker in a school. In other words, he was cleaning up in a school. He'd had a bad accident, and it had left him. My impression was that he was kind of not intellectually all there. And that was kind of sad. He wanted to reconnect. He wanted to come and see me, and he started sending me pictures of us together as children, but I really didn't want to reconnect, and so I gradually just eased him out.
Yeah, yeah. Mabel would taunt you about your mom, and then and say that this Jimmy guy would amount to something, right?
And I never would.
Yeah, yeah.
She would remind me of that. Yeah, regularly.
Yeah.
She was a pretty mean-spirited person. She'd probably had a hard life herself.
Did the relationship with your father, or lack thereof, or whatever that was, did that affect the way you were a father to your own kids?
If it did, it was because I tried harder. I certainly tried harder, and I have a great relationship with my son from my first marriage and a terrific relationship with my daughter from my second, who is in New York studying at the Columbia School of Journalism. Most people consider it the best journalism school in the world, and I talk to her at least 3 times a week. We're very close.
Yeah, and is that cool for you that your own kids are in journalism?
Yes, it is cool. I suppose they didn't learn from my example.
Do you still identify with being from Prince Rupert, from being from B.C.?
I do, indeed. And I said many times in the air, I feel very much like a Westerner. My view of the world, my approach to the world is very informal, as it is with most Westerners. And I'm proud of being from British Columbia. And one of my proudest moments was when I got to sit on the floor of the legislature when my friend Iona Campagnolo was made lieutenant governor there.
Yeah, yeah. Also from Prince Rupert, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When was the last time you went canoeing?
Well, this summer I did the Miramichi River with a friend of mine who lives down there. As a matter of fact, he's a sergeant-at-arms of the House of Commons. And the river, you know, wasn't very dangerous because it was about a foot deep.
Mm-hmm.
and we canoed for about 2 hours. But he was in the rear telling me what to do. My vision is long past the point where I could do any Arctic trips or any big rapids or anything like that. I couldn't do that anymore. But this was fun, just to spend a day in a canoe on a very shallow, fast-moving river, with that where you couldn't get any trouble if you dumped.
Yeah. You canoed a lot with Trudeau.
Yes, I did. We did Arctic trips together when he was prime minister and when he was also opposition leader. And we also did some mountain climbing together. We had, you know, with Pierre, nobody was ever close to him. So when I say we were friends, I don't want people to think we were close. Even his kids weren't close to him. He was a very private person. He didn't give much of himself in that regard, but we did spend time together with a group of friends, a canoe group that I put together years ago and canoed together for 30 years, and he joined up with us, and we had a lot of fun.
There were other famous people part of that group too, right?
Well, not nationally known people, famous in their own backgrounds, senior figures in journalism and in politics behind the scenes. But not people who are well known to the general public. I doubt that any of your viewers would ever have heard of any of them.
Yeah. Now, you were close to Trudeau in terms of you'd hang out with him, not close personally.
And with his cabinet. Yeah. This was in the 70s.
Yeah. Did it affect your work, so your coverage of him?
Well, it did. And after a while, I found that I realized that I'd compromised myself. There's a limit to how well you can get to know a prime minister, and then go out at night and criticize them when you think they're wrong. And that became difficult for me, partly because I was spending time with cabinet ministers. They would be saying things about cabinet secrecy, for instance, that I couldn't then report because of the conditions under which I'd learned it. And no reporter should compromise himself like that. I realized at the time that it was a mistake. My bosses and I talked about it, and they said, well, let's send you away to Washington for a few years to get deloused. And I was there for 9 years. And coming back to Ottawa as bureau chief, I never made that mistake again.
Well, was covering Washington during the Reagan years, was that fun?
Well, it was very exciting. Ronald Reagan was one of the great presidents, is recognized as one of the great presidents of the century, of his century. America, when he took over, was really back on its butt. It was in big trouble. The economy, interest rates had hit 21%. Americans were being held prisoner in Iran. People were beginning to wonder. There had been four or five failed presidencies in a row. People were beginning to wonder whether the job was doable. And Reagan just turned out to be an immensely successful, strong president and really beloved by Americans. And still, when you hear almost any debate about by Republicans or Democrats, it often comes back to Reagan did this and Reagan did that.
And you got to do sort of the fun stuff. You got to hang out at Ben and Sally's and the Gottliebs, right?
I got to hang out at the Gottliebs a lot. I got to travel internationally. And I also got to know Reagan, which is something that not many reporters who are not high-level American reporters get to do. You know, when you're a Canadian reporter in Washington, you're right up there with Zambezi Radio. You know, you're not an important figure in the Washington sphere.
Reading about some of these stories that from the past, one wonders: do politicians and journalists, do they drink as much as they seem to have?
Well, they certainly get together a lot more than perhaps people realize. And if you want to bring context to your stories, if you want to bring background depth to stories beyond just wire story coverage, you know, he said, she said, it really helps to get to know the politicians and develop a relationship where they can talk to you about what they're doing, why they're doing it, in a way that sometimes they may be able to tell you things that they are not willing to go on the record with, as long as they're aware that eventually everything will get used, maybe not the next day, you know. So, this is Ottawa, in terms of the people who work on the Hill, is like a small city of a few thousand people. And, tonight I'm going to an event, a going-away party for one of my colleagues, Jane Tabor. Well, there will be all kinds of politicians there, and we'll all spend the night together having a few beers and talking, and I'll learn things that I'll use, not tomorrow, but it's all background.
Yeah, yeah. No, the penultimate chapter in your book, Oliver's Twist, deals with contemporary politics, and you talk about covering Mr. Harper and his government. Has covering the Hill changed now that we have a majority?
It always does. It's much less exciting, of course, because the government isn't hanging on the ropes every day about whether it'll be defeated or not. Reporters can relax a little more. We don't have to worry every day, is the government going to be defeated today? What might happen today? And from the government's point of view, they have to make a lot of compromises with the opposition parties. That makes for a very busy time, an interesting mix of issues. Everybody's important. It was Jack Layton who finally brought down the Harper government, but other times it was Jack Layton that saved the Martin government and other liberals who saved other governments. You know, it's a much more fertile mix when you have opposition and minority parliaments. Majority governments are always a bit of a bore. There's no threat of a defeat. They know they can shove anything through that they want to, although this government's going farther than anybody has in shoving their issues down the throat of the opposition and not giving them a chance to really have a full debate about important issues that will matter to a lot of Canadians' lives.
Now, you've gotten to know Mr. Harper somewhat, as close as one can possibly get to know him, I guess.
Yeah.
Can you compare him to other prime ministers that we've had previously?
Well, he is Trudeau-esque in the sense of being seriously intelligent. He's Trudeau-esque also in the sense of being an intensely private person. He's Trudeau-esque also in the sense that he does not like media at all. There are a million things he'd rather do than spend 2 minutes with a reporter. But he doesn't have the warmth, the charm, that really successful long-term political figures have. He just, that's not something that he has. I think he was lucky to get this majority, but to some degree he made a lot of his own luck. But if he can manage to win another majority, then I think we will say that he's been one of the most successful political leaders we've ever had. But that'll be an uphill struggle, because more and more he's alienating himself from Quebec, and it's pretty tough to win a majority in Canada if you end up with little or no support in Quebec. Very few people have ever done that.
Now, in a couple of the interviews that you've done about this book, you've been asked about advice that you'd give aspiring journalists. People can watch those interviews or buy the book. Better just buy the book, because it's all in there. But I was wondering, what advice would you give us, the media consumer or the voter, when we're watching you guys?
What advice would I give? By the way, I just received a call, and I'll just tell them that I'm on the air with you.
Sure.
And then maybe they could call back.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
I should have turned that off, sorry, but this is live TV, right?
Yeah.
What advice would I give? First, be inquisitive. Don't take no for an answer, but don't be rude. Treat people in politics with respect. They deserve respect. They've been elected. You haven't been elected. Second, don't allow yourself to be compromised. People understand when you're dealing with politicians that, and so they understand, that what they say will eventually be used. But also, don't ask them, tell them not to tell you things which can never be used, because that then does become a compromise. Apart from that, I think what we need in journalism is people with energy, and the other quality we need is people who have some depth. So I say to these kids, go to the best schools you can go to. Go to school as long as you can, up to within reason. Study history, because history is essentially old news, and it gives you perspective, it gives you a context, it gives you a reason to measure one thing against another, so that everything you cover isn't the most important thing that ever happened. It's important to know that. It's important to bring historical context to your news stories. People like that.
How long will you continue at this?
I might continue for 4 or 5 years after I die. I don't know. I mean, I'm still enjoying it. So it's a question of how long this company wants me to stay. And if they decide they don't want me to, then I'll just look around and see what else I can do. But I still enjoy the work. I'm working full-time now. I'm 73. So I'm rethinking the idea of whether I want to work full-time. I don't think I do. So I will probably drop off question period next year and hand over to a younger, great guy, Kevin Newman, and then I'll just do commentaries for the network and other things.
Yeah. Now, you talk in the book about the inability you had getting close with others. You got close with a lot of people physically, but emotionally that was a hard thing for you. How did you overcome that?
Or I have you? By getting wiser, getting older, getting wiser. I don't think I really grew up until I was about 55.
Yeah.
It was hard for me to trust people. When you're an abandoned person, you trust is a big issue. And so I just sort of had to work at that. But one of the things I learned from that childhood is to accept whatever comes at you. Avoid anger. Anger is the most self-defeating of all the sins we may have. And treat people with affection and respect. It works every time.
Now, there's a story in Father Ingham's book about you having dinner with him and his mother.
Yeah, and I think he kind of, I think he exaggerated that, but I have to say, I wish Alan hadn't reported that. I don't know why he felt it was necessary to do it. And, you know, the other thing I can add is, Alan is very lucky that I didn't decide to do the same thing to him.
Uh-huh.
Believe me,
yeah.
Alan and I were in Washington together. But, I, you know, what would I gain? And people say to me, why didn't you write more about the all of the problems that politicians had behind the scenes? Give us some juice about their personal lives. Why would I want to damage their personal lives? If they ever did anything criminal or chargeable, I'd tell the police. But in terms of divorces, extramarital affairs, why ruin their lives by reporting that kind of stuff? To me, that's cheap journalism, and I wish Alan hadn't decided to quote me about some things.
Yeah. Craig, congratulations on this book and continued success with it. We'll watch you on Sundays.
Thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate that.
You're very
Thanks
welcome.
For the call.
You're very welcome. The book is called Oliver's Twist, The Life and Times of an Unapologetic Newshound. It's published by Viking. Question period, that's on CTV Sundays. It's co-host Craig Oliver on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.